I'm joined by Gareth Barker, as always. I also have Andy Dawson here. Normal service is resumed. Back in our comfort zones in more ways than one, Gareth, this week. Back in our studio. This feels a lot better, though, doesn't it?
It's pro, isn't it?
Last week was pirate radio at its best. Three blokes hovered around one microphone, like, but we got through it in the end, didn't we? But
it was bang average.
It's normal. The service resumed as well in the fact that Sunderland have just been beat. So we're back to that. Yeah. I'm joined by Gareth, as always, as you've just heard. I'm also joined by Andy Dawson. You all right, Andy?
I'm all right, yeah.
Yep, good stuff. Well, we can't waste any time. We're going to have to touch on this Villa catastrophe. You know, that's one word. That's one way of looking at it. Complacency, Gareth. Me and you sat here last week and we said that Paulo Di Canio would not let his players get complacent. He has actually came out and admitted that he thinks that's what happened.
He said they were poisoned.
Yeah, poisoned by... Poisoned. Yeah, exactly. So
it's not like poison... Complacency.
We were, let's be honest, Gareth, we were poor all over the pitch, weren't we?
I think there was some particularly bad performances from people you wouldn't expect. I think Mignolet probably had his worst game for about 3 years, and Cuellar, Bardsley, Gardner. So if four players don't play very well to the level that they didn't play, then you're going to get stuffed.
Mm-hmm. Second, I mean, to be fair, I didn't think the first half an hour or even the first half was that bad. It was the second half. The second half was as close to the Newcastle sort of 5-1 Halloween horror show that I can remember, do you think?
Maybe. I don't know. I mean, I just think that we just got done for pace, didn't we, really, in the game, and we couldn't keep hold of the ball. Just kept coming back. I think it was a different kind of stuffing. Like the 5-1 one was just gutless, where I didn't think we were gutless in the game. They did try, but they just weren't very good at football.
Mm-hmm. Andy, this Sunderland side isn't good enough to get complacent in any shape or form, is it, really, in the Premier League?
Not really, no. I mean, we won the two matches that we won, and complacency shouldn't set in, and the manager shouldn't be allowing it to set in either. I mean, as you just said there, I think the first half we weren't that bad. We were 2-1 down at half time, but at half time I thought there's still goals in this second half. I just didn't think they would all be for Aston Villa.
Absolutely. But is it refreshing to hear a manager, Gareth, you know, not protect his players in the sense that, you know, when I spoke to him this week, he said yes, the players were complacent. Managers tend to protect the players and say, no, it wasn't that, it wasn't down to that, but it clearly was.
Yeah, I think Keane did that a bit, didn't he? He sort of referred to a level of complacency at times. But yeah, I think fair play to him. We have talked about it before, about you've got to be honest sometimes and you can't, you know, paper over cracks, and it's going to be interesting to see what happens, how they react. It's all... You know, it's early days and it's the first, you know, we haven't been beaten like that in a long while, so he's got a task on his hands for Monday night.
I think if your players lose a match, then you can kind of try and defend them in public while bollocking them in private. Mm. But when it's a 6-1, there's nothing else you can do other than come out and say we weren't good enough. Mm-hmm.
He looked embarrassed afterwards. He did look embarrassed.
But he also done it in a kind of subtle way, didn't he? He didn't come out, you mentioned Roy Keane there, Gareth, he didn't come out and sort of say that was a disgrace, my players were so complete. He just kind of dropped it into an answer when he got asked the question and he answered it. He didn't make a big fuss of it. He didn't make a big thing of it. So, again, you mentioned Roy Keane. He doesn't want to go down that route too much, where his players become his enemies, doesn't he?
Well, no. Was it Kung Fu kick the tactics board or something?
He asked somebody to put it up for him first as well, before he Kung Fu.
Yeah, was it Whitehead? Whitehead put it up and it was, you know, the wrong side of the room, so he had to launch across. Di Canio, it's early days, isn't it? And I think it's interesting. You try, it's mixed feelings in a way, because you are disappointed that you've been beaten 6-1 in a game. I mean, you're disappointed when you lose, but to lose 6-1, it's humiliating, especially... You know, let's be honest, Everyone knows a Newcastle supporter, and I'm sure on Saturday night or on Sunday you were like, oh, he got beat 6-0. Yeah, we got beat 6-1, so it doesn't feel so great. But
at least we scored.
Yeah, at least we scored. But it's just one of those things. But you kind of got to look at it from an analytical point of view. You're looking at it to think it's a test. It's an early test. It's to see how he reacts, because he hasn't. This is the first setback he's had, really.
In a way, we spoke and said we were glad that didn't happen the first game, the Chelsea game. That could have been very different for us.
It could have been.
Is it? Am I being petty, Andy, in thinking one positive that came out of it was that Agabong Lahore didn't square for Darren Bent to score the sixth goal? Because when you've seen him in space, everybody was worrying about that. Yeah. We'd be lying if we said we weren't.
That would have been the icing on the cake. But there's the thing as well, that the fact that a 6-1 defeat was possibly better than a 1-0 defeat would have been in terms of goal difference.
Yeah.
Because it brought Wigan and Newcastle back into the goal difference.
And it didn't really affect those too much. We're still way ahead.
So in a way, it was a victory.
Yeah. You know what?
A moral victory.
Yeah. That's great. That's great that we can find these positives for 6-1.
It could have been different. It could have been different and say if Gardner's equaliser had counted and Sessegnon had sent
Which I've seen him count. Right, Gareth, you called the team selection last week.
I did.
Now we're not gonna. I am gonna start blaming individuals soon, but not as such, because rather than everybody say it, right, oh, Gardner had a bad game, Bardsley had a bad game. As we said, you called the team, so it wasn't like it was a radical change.
No.
It wasn't like he was really tinkering for tinkering's sake. This is the same side he played at Chelsea. So, but in hindsight, again, hindsight's a wonderful thing, but. You've got to blame a manager if you're going to blame anyone for changing a team. That team didn't need to be changed, in my opinion.
I think you can change a winning team. I don't agree with that. I think you can.
No, of course you can.
A lot of people say, oh, you shouldn't have changed a winning team. Well, people have complained a lot about players being played out of position.
Mm-hmm.
He had players available to fill all the positions on the pitch, and the only real one was Larsson and Johnson playing on the opposite side.
Yes, but that's it. But he's changed his team to put Larsson out of position. It's not like
He was playing out of position in the middle for the last two games.
But is that out of position anymore for him, though? He's been playing
well. Wait a minute, you were saying he was rubbish 2 weeks ago.
I've been his biggest critic, but what I mean is, because our centre midfield's been so poor this season, you've been looking for somebody to come and dictate play, somebody to come and grab the game, and Larsson, to his credit, has finally done that in the last two games, and Craig Gardner hasn't played for a while, for a few weeks, and it's always hindsight. But what's your thoughts, Andy? I'm not saying you shouldn't change a winning team, but in hindsight, that was probably the wrong decision, wasn't it?
In hindsight, it probably was. I wouldn't have changed the team personally, because I felt it was operating quite well the way it was. Mm-hmm. I thought Colback did a brilliant job against Everton's left-hand side players, and he'll have gained a lot of confidence as a footballer from that. I would have kept him in. I don't rate Phil Bardsley a great deal. The fact that he's still here now,
that queue's getting longer and longer.
Yeah, the fact that he's still playing for the club now, after all these years, is a bit bewildering to me.
Mm-hmm.
But so I would have kept Cole back in. Larsson, as you said, has played better centre mid the last couple of matches than he has for the whole of the season for me.
Mm-hmm.
He's been disappointing all season as far as I'm concerned.
Yep.
But his tail's been up again the last couple of matches.
Well, that's it. And then you're taking him out of the engine room, aren't you? You're playing somebody whose confidence is high. But Gareth, you mentioned the Larsson there on the left wing, and it seems logical, because we discussed going back to when we spotted the Swindon fan and we got a Swindon perspective that he likes to play one winger like Johnson, and on the other side he prefers his full back to get forward and the winger in front of him to cover. So it's logical Larsson would do that, with Danny Rose getting forward. Aston Villa's right-hand side, and their right-back in particular, Matt Loughton, he really, really took advantage of that, didn't he? He got forward, and that was, we were exposed as being a weakness on that side.
I don't think Larsson's your man if you want someone to cover at all. I think it's one of his weaknesses is getting back, because he just hasn't quite... He's got a good engine, but he hasn't really... He tries hard, but it's something. As the game goes on, he just can't quite get.
I think rather than get back, it's not get forward in the first place, kind of thing.
Well, he's rocking a hard place. I mean, if you want somebody to go up and down the wing and stay out there and defend as well as attack, you're probably looking at McLean to play left. And he might do that this weekend. This Monday, with given the situation with Sessegnon, which I'm going to talk about that decision.
The Sessegnon with the red card? Not for me, Andy.
I've seen them given. It's one of them, do you know what I mean? It if it wasn't given as a red, if you got a yellow for it, you could understand it. Mm-hmm. The fact that a red was given, you can kind of see it as well.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't think there was any point in appealing against it. I thought that was a total non-starter.
Yeah, well, yeah.
I think it's most of them.
Mm-hmm. I can see why he done it in a way, because, you know, I mean, somebody asked him yesterday if he was surprised they didn't overturn the decision, and he said no. Do you know? I think he was expecting it as well, but I think his logic was, you know, we're not going to want to go on a Tottenham game. You know, that shouldn't really matter.
They had to appeal it because if they'd won it,
exactly, he's
then
available.
He's available.
Well, watch
so
one more
games
game.
To go,
yeah,
watch one more game.
But you've also seen appeals where a ban's been increased because the appeal was regarded as frivolous. So,
but if he misses the first game, you'd rather have him available for the three at the back end of this season than miss the first one at the start of next.
Well, yeah, but the appeal was never going to be overturned, was it?
You just don't know.
I think the fact that Suarez didn't appeal, they'll have gotten a lip on over that. They'll think, no, we will reject somebody's appeal.
Yeah.
We will make that
work. I think it's something like 98% of them that haven't been overturned. Mm. So
it's just the whole thing that he's looking at, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It's
whether or not you think it was.
Ambiguous doesn't even do it justice.
Yeah. Whether or not you think it was a red card or not, I think there's others that just, you know, the whole Hadara McManaman one, and then you got the Gouffran one, you think, well, that's not they don't review that afterwards, even though that was a terrible tackle. Mm-hmm. And you know, a lot of it
goes down on what the ref's saying on the day, which is stupid, isn't it?
It's that we don't want to re-referee the game, that's mm-hmm. the whole thing. But you know, it's illogical anyway, because mm-hmm. if you start, they do.
Yeah.
As soon as you start administering bans and retracting bans, you are. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, never mind. We are going to speak to Mark Holmes and get a Stoke City perspective. Mark, of course, writes for Team Talk, which I'm sure most of you will come across the podcast and the website generally. So we're going to speak to Mark in just a second. Gareth, this is now back to a bit of an important game of sorts. Mm. We were kind of, you know, one eye at the end of the season thinking, you know, the hard work was done, probably getting a bit complacent ourselves as the players were. It's, you know, are we hoping now that Stoke's going to have that same attitude? Because a lot of people were saying they were going to go down.
Mm. Or changes
and,
every week.
Well,
it?
That's it. And they've just won two games on the road, the same as we had. So they're surely now in a position thinking they're safe, or are we just clutching the straws, are you?
I don't think that'll be the case. But I think a draw will be enough for both teams to stay up this season, I think. I don't think Wigan will get 36 points. I've said this to you.
Yeah.
I think people are panicking. They're not that good.
Mark, is this going to be a problem for you? Because Or are you not really worried? Are you just relieved that you've stayed up? That do you think there's any possible way that Stoke players may have took their eye off the ball a little bit now?
It's certainly possible. I always think at this stage of the season that, you know, the motivation to win counts for a lot, and clearly Sunderland need that win a little bit more than Stoke.
Yeah.
But from a Stoke perspective, I'm hoping that on the back of those two wins that the confidence is up, because I think that has been probably the biggest reason for the rut. Certainly defensively, the confidence has been down. So hopefully, on the back of two wins, it'll be up a little bit. But I have to agree that I think a draw for both teams would certainly keep them up.
Yeah. So what's down to the change, Mark? You've just said confidence there. Do you think that's all it is? Because, I mean, I'm not going to claim to have, you know, watched the Stoke games in great detail, but it seems highly unlikely that Pulis isn't going to dramatically change systems and formations and the like.
It's so tough to pinpoint one reason for what's gone wrong. I mean, confidence plays a part in it. But if you look at the defensive record in the first half of the season, you know, people were talking about it. Gary Neville was talking about it, about one of the best in Europe. Since then, for whatever reason, that's gone to pot. Now, Stoke have never scored goals particularly, so we've always relied on, you know, the 1-0s and the 0-0s. Once you stop keeping those clean sheets and the goals still aren't coming, then that's where you've got a problem. Thankfully, in these last two games, we've kept a couple of clean sheets. So hopefully, whatever went wrong, whether it was players being injured, because we've had both our full-backs have been injured here and there and chopping and changing, so I'm sure that's had an effect. Whether there's a bit of confidence, as I mentioned before, gone out with the likes of Shawcross after the England call-up, his confidence seemed to go. Of course, he had the run-around by Ibrahimovic. That might have played a part. But, yeah, as with any team that struggles, there's so many, you know, a combination of factors that have that have played a part in this poor run, but certainly confidence has been one of them.
Mm-hmm. What's the situation with Kenwyn Jones, Mark? I know he was in and out the team. He was back in favour for a little bit, wasn't he, recently?
He was. I mean, that's another, you know, problem this season. Pulis has stuck with players that haven't been playing particularly well, and Peter Crouch is a case in point. I think he'd scored one goal in 26 games prior to that goal at QPR the other week. But Kenwyn was looking good. I think he scored 3 and 4 at one stage. He was coming off the bench but causing problems, looking lively, looking up for it, looking hungry, you know, which you don't always get from Kenwyn. So Stoke fans were crying out for him to be bought in, but he got a little run, 2-3 games, and then Crouch was straight back in the team. Now, thankfully, Crouch had done the business in the last couple of games, but prior to that, certainly Jones was really harshly dropped.
You mentioned sort of the fans wanting him to be in the side there, and Tony Pulis has always struck me as a kind of Peter Reid, very stubborn type. Do you get that impression from him? If you think almost to the point where he thinks if they want me to do something, I'm not going to do it?
Absolutely. I absolutely agree with that. Pulis seems to... He claims not to pay any attention to what the fans are saying, and he says it's water off a duck's back, but I'm certain that he does. He does pay attention to the criticisms that are being levelled at him and what the fans are saying about this player should be starting, this player shouldn't. But he loves doing it his own way. And when it comes off and when he's won a game doing it his way, you know, he's not too quick to mention that to the fans, really. So certainly I think that stubbornness has been a problem this season because... You know, we had such a long, bad run, and Pulis just would not change the team. The approach, as you mentioned earlier, has not really changed, and that's probably never going to change. So the one thing you've got to do is freshen up the team, but he just wouldn't do that, and the likes of Jones have suffered from that, unfortunately.
Yeah, just on the subject of change and Pulis, do you think the summer's going to be an interesting one? Because Stoke, for a long while now, have been quite... After the first couple of seasons in the Premier League, they've been sort of a mainstay, and they've never really been in danger, and this is the first time since maybe that second season that they've looked in trouble. You know, do you think there's a bit of a sea change in that people are thinking about, is Pulis the right man, and is that something in the summer that might be looked at, or will there be fan pressure on the board to make a change, or is Tony Pulis going to have to really start changing the way he does things in order to sort of make an impression again?
I think all of that is true, actually. There is certainly a, you know, large portion now of Stoke fans that want change, simply because it does become quite boring moaning about the same things every time. You know, Pulis seems to make the same mistakes over and over again, whether it be sticking with players when they're out of form, as I've mentioned, whether it be playing too defensively, particularly away from home. So fans have got tired of that. But, you know, you try and look at it from a neutral perspective and from the results. As you mentioned, this is the first season that we've even flirted with relegation, really. So Peter Coates has got to sort of step away from what the supporters are saying and really look at the success overall. Tony Pulis has been so quick recently to talk about the entire 7 years. You know, judge me on what I've done over the past 7 years. And, you know, if you look at that full spell, then he has done fantastically well. So the question is, after one poor season or two bad halves of seasons is probably more accurate, because he had a bad second half of last season. You know, is that enough to sack him? He obviously feels that it isn't, but Stoke fans, as I say, are tired of moaning about the same things, really. So it's certainly on the agenda. Peter Coates, the chairman, has sort of purposely not spoken about his future, Tony Pulis' future, but I'm certain there'll be some discussions, and whether it be either a change in approach that is sort of forced upon Pulis, or whether it be a change in the backroom staff, which seems to be happening a little bit, or whether it be a change in the manager, we're just not too sure, but certainly change is the buzzword at Stoke at the moment.
I think it's difficult as well when you always thought with Stoke, going to the Britannia was, and I've been a few times myself, it is a difficult game, and when that wears off, and it just seems to have weared off a little bit, it doesn't seem to have that intensity anymore. And like when the Stadium of Light first opened, I remember for the first 5-6 years, it really was tough place. It was really difficult for away teams to come, but once that kind of goes a bit flat, it seems really difficult to lift that again. And so when I've seen Stoke in sort of recently, I don't know if I'm just reading it wrong based on what I've seen on the television, but it just doesn't seem to have that intensity that it did maybe a couple of years ago.
No, you're absolutely right, and that applies to the to the supporters and to the players. As you'll know yourself, you know, the first couple of seasons when you come up into the Premier League, every point is treated like a huge victory, and the fans are just constantly getting behind the team almost no matter what. Now we're in the fifth season, and fans are expecting us to turn up and probably beat the likes of Sunderland without too much fuss. That's obviously not the case. But also, I think, you know, the players have got to take some responsibility, because they've not done enough to lift the crowd and get the crowd going. You mentioned intensity. Stoke were always famous for pressing high up the pitch the way that Southampton, for instance, have done. Yeah. That's gone out of the game this season, and that's possibly part of the reason why the defence has suffered as well, because there's so much sitting off and waiting for the opposition to break through that, yeah, the intensity is the key word. That is what has dropped out of Stoke's play more than anything else, mm-hmm. and no surprise that it's transferred into the stands.
I suppose it brings me on to my next point a bit, Mark, that, you know, it's almost a bit clichéd when people say Stoke are a side, you know, going through, you know, transaction and the like, but it just seems like, from an outside perspective, again, excuse my ignorance here, but it seems that Pulis had a couple of goes at dabbling with, you know, the away from the norm a little bit almost, and he seems to almost just always revert back to what he knows best. Now, I don't mean this in a derogatory way, you know, but Stoke had a reputation for a style, you know, the identity is very clear in the footballing world, but the fans, while that's all pragmatic and helpful in the first couple of seasons, you play into your strengths all the time, and it would be crazy to suggest you shouldn't do that. I mean, Blackpool, came up, tried to play nice football, went straight back down. But as you've touched upon yourself, 5 seasons into it, are the fans looking for that little bit of a change now? And also, in your opinion, is Pulis capable of making it happen?
Well, again, there's no ignorance from your part, because you've got it all spot on. Particularly at the start of this season, Pulis did try to bring about change. The signing of Charlie Adam was a hint at that, and he tried to play him in the Kevin Nolan role, if you like, behind the striker as the advanced midfielder, thinking that he can get us goals, he can be a playmaker in there. Didn't really work out, but the biggest problem has been that we didn't sign any capable wingers in the summer. That's always been the mainstay of Stoke's play, good balls into the box, players beating the full-backs. Unfortunately, Matthew Evington isn't the player he once was. I think injuries and age have taken the toll. Jermaine Pennant, of course, is a no-show these days. And Michael Cartley come in and hasn't, you know, he's been hit and miss. He's been lukewarm. So, yeah, it's a combination of things. He's tried to change his style, but the things that we were once good at have disappeared from the game. So the slight improvements that we have made, because we do pass the ball slightly better than we used to, but that's been negated by, you know, us losing the intensity of the pressing, and the wing play hasn't been as good. So it's difficult. And what Pulis tends to do when, you know, a few games don't go to plan, he tends to, as you mentioned, revert back to his tried and tested formula, which unfortunately has gone on for half a season, which has meant, you know, the cloggers, well, that's a bit of a derogatory term, but the workhorses, getting games ahead of the more creative, skillful players. You know, Charlie Adams barely played the second half of the season, whereas someone like John Walters will play every game because Pulis knows he'll get 100% out of, and he knows he'll get 5-6 miles covered a game. So he does, he falls back into his tried and trusted methods, and that again is one of the reasons why a lot of Stoke fans want change, because they just don't believe that anything will change next season. There might be a honeymoon period for a while, but as soon as things go wrong, every expectation is that Pulis will revert to type and will be complaining about the same things 12 months from now. So, yeah, it's a difficult one. It really is. I personally believe he is capable of change, but I think the failings in the transfer market have really, really hampered him these past couple of seasons, because he's not really strengthened where we need to. And actually, as I mentioned, where we were good, we've got worse, because he hasn't improved there either. So with a good transfer window, I do believe that he's capable of getting us playing some decent stuff and getting the ball out wide and into the box again. But a lot of Stoke fans feel differently and will tell you it's time to go.
Yeah, I guess what you've got to worry about is that you've seen a couple of years you had a bit of a poor second half of the season. This year you've had a much, much worse second half of the season. You just don't want that to transfer into being a poor first half of the season, or you could be in real trouble. Gareth, so, where do you think this game can be won for Sunderland? Or lost.
Probably. No, well, I think we're not going to be under the same, like, again, no disrespect to Stoke, it seems to be the catchphrase this evening. Maybe we should call the podcast this evening, no disrespect to Stoke, but I don't think we're going to, Villa are going to hurt, sorry, Stoke are going to hurt us in the same way Villa hurt us with the pace. I think that's where we really struggled. It was the relentlessness of the attacks we couldn't get to grips with, whereas Stoke are a more methodical side and don't attack with that intensity. You know, they'll definitely move the ball forward quickly. I'd expect that. And if Cuellar plays and he's lacking a bit of confidence, he's somebody who could get bullied. Mm-hmm. And that would be a worry for me. So that would be where I think Stoke can damage us. From our perspective, I think if we're cute enough in the middle, we can outplay Stoke in the middle of the park, because I don't really think that Stoke central midfield is up to scratch, to be honest. And I think that's an area.
Dean White, isn't up to scratch. what do you possibly mean?
If we can win that midfield battle, I just feel. And that moving Larson back in the middle on Monday night might not be such a bad idea based on what we're talking about before. But yeah, I think that's somewhere that we could hurt them. And if we can do that, then I'm confident that will create chances in the game.
Any areas you're looking at, Mark, where the game could be won and lost to Stoke? You must be happy Sessegnon's not playing, are you?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, Sessegnon's the one player that we would really worry about. The other one is probably Adam Johnson. He's had a few good games against Stoke down the years. I consider him to be your biggest defensive threat. And that happens to be a problem for us down our left-hand side, because we're likely to have Andy Wilkinson playing at left-back on Monday night. He's obviously a right-footed defender generally, but Mark Wilson is not going to play. So certainly that's a little bit of a concern for us. Aside from that, I will counter what's just been said and say that I don't particularly rate Sunderland midfield that highly.
I think we'd all agree with you there, but you know, probably cancel each other out.
Yeah, well, it's, you know, Stoke and Sunderland are remarkably similar, particularly when Martin O'Neill was in charge. I think they've got the same strengths and the same weaknesses. So yeah, I would expect a lot of cancelling out. But you mentioned Cuellar before. I think that Cameron Jerome could play a key role in the game, because he started playing in the last few weeks, and he's the one player we've got with a little bit of pace. Now, Sunderland's defence has not got too much pace about it, so if he can isolate himself against O'Shea or one of the full-backs, perhaps, that can get us up the pitch, because what we tend to struggle to do when Crouch starts is get up the pitch, because he's so slow and immobile that the teams can just push up to the halfway line. Mm-hmm. Jerome's made it a little bit easier for us to counter-attack, so I'm hoping that he's going to sort of do what Johnson will try and do for you and stretch the play a little bit.
Right. Are you up for the game, Mark?
Well, I've arranged months and months and months ago to come up, so I'm up in Sunderland for the weekend, and of course it's been moved to the Monday night. I'm not going now.
So you're stuck up here for a weekend. There's absolutely nothing to do. Okay. Sorry, Andy, you got to me?
No, well,
he's off. Stephen's gone. He's like, right, that's that. See you later. Bye.
My thoughts about the match coming up. I think it's got a goalless draw written all over it. I think a point would suit both teams. I think if we get a point, that's us safe. Stoke 99% safe as it is. Another point will see them right. They're on a bit of an unbeaten run. I think they'll come here to avoid defeat. And I'm not sure that we'll have enough without Sessegnon to be able to beat them.
That's so, the worry, isn't it? I mean, we're going to speak about that now, generally, for 10 minutes or so as well, anyway. But before I let you go, Mark, can I have a quick prediction from you?
Yeah, I'm going to reiterate that. I think that a draw is the most likely outcome. I think it'll be an awful game for the neutral to watch, probably short on goal scoring chances and quality and all the rest that we usually associate with Stoke. So not for the neutral, but I'm sure we'll enjoy getting the point each.
Perfect game for Sky Sports then.
Imagine if it was O'Neill still in charge. What a thriller that would be. O'Neill versus Pulis, yes, in the battle of stay up.
Okay, that's Mark Holmes from Team Talk. Thanks for coming on, Mark.
Cheers, fellas.
Okay, thanks, bye. Well, we are going to dive straight into, you know, what, touching more upon what Andy was saying there. We might as well stay on the Sessegnon factor. Gareth, during the week, you asked me, you knew that I was interviewing De Canio for Sun FM, so thanks to them for this footage. And you asked me what was it? You want to know if Adam Johnson? Yeah,
well, that's been the running theme of my
argument. Whether Adam Johnson could play in the hole. I've been saying this for weeks, by the way. If people haven't been listening, he's been even before.
They definitely haven't been listening when I've been speaking.
Even before Paolo Di Canio came, Gareth was, you know, he was pushing for Adam Johnson.
I've cooled a bit recently because we've been more compact, so Sessegnon's worked, but Johnson in the hole.
Well, bearing that in mind, I did ask Paolo that for Gareth. On behalf of Gareth, but
did he say that to him? Did you? He was like, "Oh, anything for Gareth."
Yeah, obviously, also on behalf of Sun FM primarily. It's the big news, obviously, regarding Stefan Sessegnon failed to get his ban overturned. So, you talked about Plan Bs as well last week. What comes in your mind now? Could you see maybe Adam Johnson going there, or a change of formation, or do you have something in mind?
I don't talk about Stefan because he's out. I focus my attention to my players. So, I have enough quality for score a goal, for win a game. We have a quality. Danny Graham didn't score yet. It came the time. I'm sure that he's going to score because in the next few games it will be crucial. We have Adam Johnson that is capable to score. We have a different way to damage the opponent. So I'm not worried. I'm not worried, to be honest. I'm not a kind of manager that cry. Obviously, I would like to have all my players available, many options, but it's not possible. We are going to find a way to damage the opponent. I don't tell you now if we change a formation, if we change you know, system, obviously, but for sure we are going to put on the field the best team that can win the game and get 3 points.
You satisfied with that, Gareth?
Sidestep. Tough questions, you see. That's, well, it's the tough questions, hard-hitting journalism.
It's the most cagey I've seen him regarding, you know, he doesn't give anything away, team selections and formations and injury news. He won't go into that at all either, which is you know, interesting, but is there anything you would prefer, Andy, regarding, you know, who could play, I suppose, just behind Danny Graham, or would you have a total shift in formation, or which way do you think you would go?
I would probably put Johnson in there behind Danny Graham because I think we really don't have that many options now. I think Johnson's probably the best of the bunch that we've got that could do that. And
I just like disagreeing with Gareth. I'm not even opposed to the idea. It's just because he's been saying it for that long that I'm just kind of like,
everyone's bandwagoning now. And it's all over the internet.
The time has come for that idea now, hasn't it?
But it's
always the other option, though. That you know, you go the 4-3-3 thing again, don't you? McLean and Larson on the wings, and Gardner the most advanced of a three-man midfield. But you're tinkering a little bit too much there, aren't you? Because then you would have to bring Colback or Vaughan in, and
well, I think. I'm not a massive callback fan. I don't think he's bad. I just think he's too negative, maybe the wrong word, but he doesn't have the confidence and ability to pass the ball forward sometimes. But, you know, he probably deserves a game based on the fact he played so well against Everton and got dropped. And maybe Di Canio's thinking, you know, could bring a callback into the middle, but he must be disappointed in Gardner because he sort of made a bit of a big deal about Gardner,
he
quietly
like he likes him,
say he likes him and he wants him available. He's because of the mentality, but he was so poor in the middle.
Like I always say about Craig Gardner, my issue with him is he's not a bad player, but he's just not authoritative enough in a two-man midfield. And without Sessegnon, it's an option to play three in midfield, and you would fancy him to get forward and support, you know, because you're taking him out the engine room there. Playing him just behind a forward, because let's be honest, if a chance fell to him 20 yards from goal, you would fancy him to take it.
You might do. I'd put him at right back though at the weekend. So
right back.
He'd be going back to right back for me just to get Bardsley out of the team.
I'm not sure if Di Canio was saying the right back. It'd be interesting to see if he ever does that. Andy, if we don't win, well, you've just said a draw wouldn't be the worst result, so I'll rephrase it. If we lose on Monday, Are we at panic stations again?
I don't think we are. I don't think Wigan are going to get enough points to be able to catch us. Mm-hmm. I don't know who will go down, but I don't think it'll be us. I think, as I've said, a draw would suit both teams on Monday night, and I wouldn't be surprised at all if that was the result. If we don't win, if we lose on Monday night, we've got the Southampton game coming up, which will be more of an open football kind of game, which hopefully we can win, because Southampton are safe.
My sort of worry, I mean, Southampton's next week, we'll talk more about next week, but initially is, you know, when Mark touched on the point there, how high up the field Southampton press, a lot like Aston Villa.
After the Villa game, I was thinking, Matt Southampton game. Yes, not looking forward to that one as much.
But apart from that, Gareth, is there, you know, how do you think it's going to go, really, in your heart of hearts? How do you see the game progressing?
I think we'll win the game. I think we've just, I know what you're saying, Andy, about without Sessegnon, you don't fancy us to maybe have that cutting edge, but I just think, he was saying Mark Wilson's out, but they're going to bring in Andy Wilkinson or whatever. But I mean, those are two, they aren't very good players.
It's a test
for
De Canio in a way, because a lot of people criticise Martin O'Neilson, he didn't have a plan B. Now, De Canio, we're going to find out if he's got a plan B, because Sessegnon is such an important part of the structure of Sunderland, the way we play and our shape, that, you know, something's going to have to be altered, isn't it? I'll be amazed if you went and played 4-4-2, bog standard 4-4-2 like Martin O'Neill did.
He hasn't got the options to play 4-4-2.
Well, unless he plays Mandron, but
he's not going to. Well, he's basically said he's. Well, I know. Not going to chuck him in.
Yes,
so,
but
I don't know.
He said you never know.
I don't know what you think, Andy.
I'd be surprised if he changed the system. I think if he's going to, he might push the wingers higher up the field, and have three in central midfield and have one of them running on, which might suit us a bit better.
With Gardner then being
Gardner
advanced.
Gardner being
being advanced.
And then maybe Johnson and, maybe McLean.
Yeah, that's what I'm leaning towards, but I don't, at the same time, you don't want to, start messing up things too much. It's not the time in the season to start experimenting as such. We haven't really played that system. Steve Bruce used to play it sometimes. Martin O'Neill certainly never played it.
If you want to take positives from the Villa game, if there were any, and bring them into the Stoke game, you're looking at areas where we could hurt them, and Rose had a decent game against Villa, and Dye didn't do too badly in the middle, and Johnson actually had a reasonable game. He was pretty isolated, but he did okay. They were still sort of playing towards the end. They weren't, they were shell shocked, and we were well beaten. But it just gives us a bit of hope to think, they've not completely shot to bits. The players that we've got with a bit of quality about them could surely they've got to be, capable of hurting Stoke. Who, what is that win against QPR? Is that like their first away win all season or something
possibly.
Ridiculous?
Maybe one more. I think they might have
but
won
their,
one before.
Their home record is diabolical. Away record, sorry, is diabolical. Yes. And you've got to be looking at winning the game. I know saying about it'll be attritional, and I just think we've got enough to win it.
In a way, Andy was saying that the 6-1 has kind of worked for us in a way, because the team's near us, the goal difference thing. But in a way, is 6-1, Andy, do you think it's almost better in a way, because we mentioned complacency in the players. Now, had we just pelted out to a 1-0 defeat or a close 2-1 defeat or something, you would feel that the players were more likely to continue in that vein of form for the rest of the season, where 6-1 defeat, there has to be a reaction now. The fans and the manager will demand a reaction from them.
Yeah, totally. I mean, it's almost like one of those freak results where you say, it was a bad day at the office, let's put it behind us and carry on, and you almost just forget about it and start again and try and get back to that mindset that you had, in the Newcastle and the Everton matches.
Well, when De Canio first came, Gareth, because the players, it was a new manager, they were all trying to impress him. He's letting them know he's strict, he's making them train harder. All of a sudden, he'll have been on the case. There's no doubt behind the scenes he'll have been angry about that. So, in a way, that's what I initially thought. I thought, well, at least the players, because De Canio said to me last week, "Oh, the players are smiling in training now." And he made a joke yesterday and said, maybe they were smiling too much. Do you know what I mean?
Well, yeah. I don't think it's such a bad thing that players are going out there and playing, trying to play with confidence. Which obviously they got overconfident, and as a result, were handsomely beaten. A lot of people are talking about getting carried away, feet on the ground, and all that. I think as a supporter, as an aside, this season has been so bleak that you can't really have a go at supporters for enjoying winning two games in a row and beating Newcastle. I know people have got to keep their feet in the ground, but you got to enjoy it. Let's have our 3 weeks of excitement and then go. Maybe it's brought. It's a good thing, in a way. But I came out of the pub, after watching the game on Monday, and I didn't feel half as bad as I have done after some of the results. I felt, after that Man United game, and you got beat at home, Man U, but
That's where the carry on.
You just think we're just going nowhere here.
I think we got 6 points that we didn't think we were going to get, and we were in a bit of a comfort zone, maybe as the players were.
Exactly.
And it, you know, if you come out of the pub on Monday night and we hadn't had them 6 points in the bag,
absolutely,
you'd be banging your fists off the wall.
Yeah,
and
the can you out.
So we've been, you know, we've been lucky to get the results that we've got. So
What about the? Well, you're just saying out there, like we were all kind of in our comfort zone a little bit. So, bearing that in mind, what do we think the atmosphere might be like on Monday night? Because the Everton game, you just knew that it was going to be bouncing. You knew it was going to be good atmosphere. Monday night's games on Sky generally aren't good atmospheres anywhere. Again, you know, I'm going to say it again, no disrespect to Stoke City, but they aren't the most glamorous of opponents. So
they don't bring a lot either. I mean, Everton brought.
But we need every little bit helps, doesn't it? And you know, there's no doubt that the atmosphere was a factor against Everton. David Moyes even said as much afterwards.
Yeah, but that's in the hands. I think it was touched on when we were discussing the Stoke game. He was saying that, you know, that you've got to give the fans something to shout about to an extent. And I think, like you say, the first half, we did start all right against Villa. And we've got to start the game well. And that gets people on board. I don't think there's going to be a... It's the flatness that's been a problem this season.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's it.
And you're going to the game expecting you might get a result, but you're not going to be entertained even if you get beaten or you win. So it doesn't matter. And you're kind of going flat, but you kind of feel there was a bit of a buzz before the Everton game. Obviously, we beat Newcastle, and hopefully that, you know, I'm looking forward to the game on Monday night. Before, I was sort of with O'Neill in a sense, but I was you know, an advocate of him staying, but at the same time I wasn't looking forward to going to the match.
We were all there in body but not
spirit. Maybe you've just summed up the last year as a Sunderland supporter very succinctly, but yeah, I think, you know, I'm up for it on Monday. So let's hope.
Andy, but all positive, do you think?
Well, absolutely. I think what could help is the fact that it's a bank holiday Monday, so some of the fans might be slightly more refreshed than they would be on a Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, think about that. People are not going to be at work, people are going to be out.
Yeah.
I know, I would
like
be.
A vomitorium. Yeah. come 7 o'clock. Yeah.
I'll never forget there was one match it got about 10 years ago when it was the kickoff was delayed by an hour.
You know what?
Chelsea.
I was just about to say the same thing.
The ground was lifting by 4 o'clock. It was everyone had an extra hour in the pub.
You took the words out of my mouth. Yeah. I was just going to say exactly the same. I always remember when, you know, you put it down in the pub and it was an extra hour and we won. It was a year after we beat them 4-1,
wasn't it? But we played really well
and won 1-0 still. The atmosphere was bouncing then. So
what I would say to listeners of this podcast is get out there on Monday afternoon, drink as much as you can, drink responsibly.
Yeah.
responsibly in the aid of Sunderland FC.
Yeah, but do it for the lads, yeah.
There's plenty of pubs putting
pounds not in the afternoon. Get out there and drink in the morning.
Exactly.
Yeah. Get an early start.
Some of Sunderland's establishments open 9 o'clock.
But just stay out.
That's it.
Go out on Sunday, bank holiday, get right through, and make sure Monday night you can't see.
And then also, you probably won't care if you get beat because you'll be too sloshed to be different. Right, we're going to get a prediction now before we go because we've run out of time. And I'll start with Gareth.
I'm going to say 1-0 to Sunderland.
Okay, Andy, you're going 0-0.
Mind-bendingly, diabolically, boring 0-0. Yeah.
I'll take that, though.
Yeah, I'm going to say 2-0 Sunderland, I think, just to be positive. And I'm normally the negative one, so, you know, on that note, we will see you next week, where hopefully the studio will still be working and we will have a guest on from Southampton of some sort, and we will let you know during the week. Get on your Twitter.
Shall we do that Twittery promotional thing again?
I had a feeling you were going to. I was going to try and wrap it up before you'd done it.
Factor it in.
Andy's got about 700,000 followers. He doesn't need plugs.
Yeah. So are you going to do it?
I'm going to let you do it.
I'm the publicist. Yeah. Okay. So, obviously, wise men say 1973. All these are at, obviously, because it's the Twitter. At Wise Men Say 1973 for the podcast account, which is part of At Salu Sunderland, which is the website it's hosted on. We're also now in association with Roker Report, and that's at Roker Report, and they'll be hosting the podcast on their website as well.
Get one of them lads on the phone next week.
Andy is at Profanity Swan.
I am, yeah. Combination at the moment of foul language and photographs of me dog.
And live tweeting is a thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So thanks for listening, everybody. I've been Stephen Goldsmith. I've had Gareth Barker and Andy Dawson with me. Don't panic, we'll be all right, I think.
6-0 at Sunderland on Monday night. Yeah. I've started early drinking.
Over and out, people.